How do you do? The Box Office Pulp Board feels it would be a little unkind to present this podcast without just a word of friendly warning. We're about to unfold a cinematic commentary track, made by a group of men who sought to create a podcast after their own ravings, without reckoning upon God. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with three great mysteries of the internet: analysis, observation, and deconstruction. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel you'd not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now's your chance to... Well, we've warned you. Now, to pause and refresh. For your convenience, we have an attractive refreshment stand in the lobby, with buttered popcorn, golden good and hot from the popper, your favorite candies, wholesome and rich, plus delicious Dr. Pepper, so bright and bracing with a tang and tingle unmatched by any other beverage. Enjoy an ice-cold Dr. Pepper at our beverage stand right now, and then return to fully appreciate this bop and a movie commentary track. Enjoy.
I speak for the dead.
How much do you think we get sued for if we just started this episode with Roy Orbison? Can we do that? How much? What do you think one of his songs costs? We dig him out of the grave. We Lisa Frankenstein him. No, like if we just try to commit, like use one of his songs from his back catalog. So he's got to have some shitty songs that nobody wants to use, right?
So is it weird? Roy Orbison always just makes me think of Austin Powers.
A little.
Well, odd,
I can
right?
kind of see it.
Oh, I always think of the tattoo on Henry Winkler's ass in The Waterboy.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. There's a lot of Roy mileage here I wasn't expecting to get. Anyways, I have had Running Scared stuck in my head for like 3 weeks now, and I can't wait to be done with this episode so I don't have to. I like that song. I don't want to think about it every day. Just run and scare. Shut the fuck up, Roy. I'm done with you.
Start the show, Cody.
I'm trying to delay so I don't have to drink more Malort. Welcome to Box Office Pulp, your one-stop podcast for movies, madness, moxie, and tonight, the rebirth of Saw. We are back with, part 8. We've actually been pretty dedicated so far. Good job, everybody. Part 8 in our Saw series, this time covering Jigsaw. I'm your host, Cody. Joining me today for this bop in a movie are my co-host, Mike. Say hello, Mike.
Did you know that Buckethead in the film Jigsaw 2017 was played by the musician Buckethead?
Wow.
Who is famous for playing the guitar while wearing a bucket. Anyway, this has been Watch Mojo. Please like and subscribe.
And my other co-host, Jamie. Say hello, Jamie.
Okay, so I tried to actually form this into a real joke and failed, so I'm just going to give you an image. The Lorax saying, I speak for the trees! And then slamming the door on the Onceler as he's taken apart with lasers.
Bum, 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 bum. I would love that.
It's still Danny DeVito?
Oh, it's specifically the Illumination version of these characters. It's Tumblr 60 Man once they're going, No! I'll fucking kill you, Lorax! You're fucking dead! All my family of Onceless will knit sneeds that will strangle you. And he just doesn't care. He's given the 1,000-yard stare.
Boom, boom, boom.
Delightful. All right. Well, before, folks, we jump into the movie itself, it wouldn't be Box Office Pulp if I didn't do something tragic to alcohol, which will then do something tragic
and yourself,
to me.
Yeah,
it's an Ouroboros. It just keeps going in a loop. So since we are relaunching the Saw series with this kind of soft reboot, I thought we could introduce a new dynamic to me drinking Malort, and that is I have made the classic good, decent version of a cocktail, and then I jettisoned one of the ingredients and replaced it with Malort. I have two little cocktails sitting in front of me right now, and I really hope I remember which is which, or else this first drink is going to be like when you're expecting Sprite, but you accidentally ordered like a root beer. But let's get into it. So the good drink for tonight, if you want to make something to actually drink along with, this is called the Nuclear Daiquiri. It is 1.5 ounces of silver rum, 1/2 ounce of lime juice, 1/2 ounce of velvet falernum, and 3/4 ounce of green chartreuse. Just mix all those together with some ice, pour it into a little coupe, I'd like to garnish with a cherry, maybe a little bit of lime peel wrapped around it. Nothing to it. Very fancy, easy to make, easy sipping. The bad version of this drink, I'm calling the Nuclear Meltdown Daiquiri, replaces the silver rum with a shot and a half. Shot and a half would be insane. 1.5 ounces of Malort, 0.75 ounces of green chartreuse, a half ounce of lime juice, and a half ounce of velvet falernum. The idea here is, right, it's Jigsaw. Let's see what happens when you mess with the pieces. Also, for anyone who is still having a hard time finding green chartreuse, I know there was a huge shortage of it last year. I do apologize for using some of it with Malort. It should be a crime. But hey, what are you going to do? I bought that bottle like 2 years ago and been holding on to it. So it's really mine to waste. With no further ado, let me try the good version of this drink. What I hope is the good version of this drink. I didn't label them, and they look almost identical. Delicious. The green chartreuse, if you've never had that, it's very herbal. It's a very herbal drink. But it mixes.
I have the storm right now. This is terrifying.
But it mixes pretty good. You know, the rum gives it a little bit of extra kick. The lime juice balances it out, and the velvet falernum rounds the whole thing. It's smooth, but still a pretty extreme herbal flavor. I like it a lot. You could definitely sip on that. Now, let's try the daiquiri with Malort. Ugh. Okay, I got the right one. This one smells bad. Oh, no. Nope. That's bad. Not good at all. It tastes like Malort, but like someone rolled it around in old glasses of 1800s medicine, like snake oil.
You really could have just ended with it tastes like Malort.
Yeah. I thought that's where I was going.
Campaign. Just a guy winces and goes, it tastes like Malort. Cut to black.
I don't understand how this Malort's only half the ingredients in the drink, right? And this one still just tastes mostly Malort. I can't.
It turned the rest of the drink into Malort.
I can't get like the velvet falernum out of it, the lime juice, the chartreuse. Ugh.
It was alchemy. You need a little bit of alchemy.
Well, alchemy is like when you can take dirt and make it into gold. I turn gold into horse shit.
I was talking about this with somebody the other day in terms of Mountain Dew. When you mix it with any other soft drink, no matter in what quantities, you only taste the Mountain Dew.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
It's like capitalism.
So I have these in identical glasses sitting on my desk, and I've taken equal sips out of both. I really feel like I should just kind of switch them around to myself and then just get mystery sips throughout. That'll be fine. I'll be talking about the movie, having a good time, and then all of a sudden, Malort!
I'm going to blindfold myself and spin around this chair.
I need an assistant just so she could, like, feed me poison Malort. I've got Phantom Thread in my head again.
We're about to watch Jigsaw, Cody.
Yeah, sorry. I was thinking about good movies. Sorry. Okay. Now that we all have our drinks ready, or poison, that could be a drink, whatever you call it. Let's get ready to go down this rabbit hole. Fun little fact about this Jigsaw, folks. It's actually on Amazon Prime right now. You can watch this one for free at the moment if you have a Prime account, which sounds like I'm shilling for Amazon, but I'm mostly trying to say if you want to watch this one without spending money, yeah. As of February 10th, 2024, it is possible.
Or if you're like one of the, like the five people who have an MGM Plus, account, then you can also watch it.
They do exist.
For the love of God, don't give Lionsgate any more money.
How else are they going to keep making Hunger Games spinoffs, Jamie, unless we give them cash?
Jamie, can you do your Hunger Games line?
Oh, God. I'm blanking on what it is.
That's a no.
I don't remember having a Hunger Games line.
You had a Hunger Games line for a while. It was a trailer line. I think it was from... no, you know what? I'm sorry. This is completely wrong. This is embarrassing on my part. It was a Maze Runner line.
Tomato potato, Mike.
You won't last a moment out there in the scorch. Oh, wait, no. That's Maze Runner 2, The Scorch Trials. Okay.
Yeah, it's in the name, Jamie. Are we going to have to do a whole series on The Maze Runner now? You guys need a refresher.
Well, The Maze Runner was a runaway success. Anyway.
Hey, I like The Maze Runner movies.
Well, you're wrong. And then the podcast just abruptly ends.
Honestly, I don't remember the ending of 3 and very little about 2, but the first one I thought was fun.
I've never seen them.
Oh, okay.
I'm a huge fan of the Maze Runner movies. I don't remember the last 3.
It's some kind of jerky, right? At the end of the aisle.
I'll stand by it.
Oh, man, I love the Star Wars trilogy. The journey home.
Look, 6 and 7 were good. Clearly 8 has to be just as good.
Those talking dogs so much in their adventures.
Look, the Blues Brothers movies are all fantastic. I've seen one, and it's one of the best films I've ever seen. Clearly, Blues Brothers 2000 must be on the same level.
He's good.
By this logic, we give you Jigsaw, the 8th Saw movie.
Yes, we came back around.
That's right.
We are watching the R-rated version because that is the only version that's ever been made.
You had me scared for a second, Mike. Like, oh, fuck, is there an unrated version? What am I watching on Prime? What is this?
No, they've slowly given up over the course of several films.
I don't think they were trying to make Jigsaw super graphic, but we can get into that. Thing for later.
I will count to three. After I say three, we will press play. 1, 2, 3.
Go, Jigsaw, go, Jigsaw, go.
Seeing this with the MGM Plus logo in front of it is fucking hilarious.
It's so weird.
By the way, if you are watching this on Blu-ray, you may want to wait 5 seconds, then press play.
We probably should have mentioned that before we hit play.
I forgot.
Oops.
No one is singing up Jigsaw with this comment.
That's true.
All right. I'll get into it.
I love pumped up Hello Zep for the new millennium.
I'll get into our movie facts in just a second because this one really opens on the run. So I'm just going to be interrupting important plot if I talk. I actually really enjoy this opening shot of this.
Oh, it's awesome.
It looks terrifying. It's got these blinky lights and you think you're in a trap. And it's just a speed strip.
The police.
Well, that'd be the point of the next one. So foreshadowing.
So Terry Filmick,
this is one of the wild things. We've been talking for years. Wouldn't it be crazy if a Saw movie could go outside of the dungeons? And then they give us this opening, which is essentially what they're going for to open the world in the previous Saw and did a bad job of. And I still don't think this works either. This seems so wrong for a Saw movie to have bright colors outside and a guy just running around in nature.
It's wrong, but that's why I like it, because it's so, especially so up front. It does feel a little bit
they're not hiding what kind of movie this is. They want you to know something
different. Like, we have money this time.
Yeah, which is funny because I'll get into the budget for this. This is lower than fucking Saw 7.
It's just wild.
Less money.
Well, I do kind of like the idea that after a relatively long fucking lull in movies by Saw standards, it's almost like you're going from the movie you were watching last week back into the Saw universe.
All right. So again, to be nitpicky, because I'm going to be nitpicky about Jigsaw, and I would count myself as a soft fan of the film.
Yeah.
God damn it. I hate it when writers do this kind of stuff. Like, a human being can't communicate like a human being because it would ruin the plot. So we have to have this guy basically I can't put it down. Fucking explain what's happening. Just say what's going on to the cops.
Oh, it feels like anyone in a Saw movie who isn't specifically in a trap or a police officer is a Bethesda NPC.
Very much. So this scene bothers me for a couple of reasons. But it is important because it establishes the whole tone for the movie, which is, yeah, we're connected to Saw, but things have been reconfigured so much, it's a new thing entirely. And I think your enjoyment of Jigsaw hinges on that idea. If you're a hardcore Saw fan, this one's probably going to piss you off because they cut down the violence. Now you have outdoor stuff. Just there, we saw some CGI blood and explosions. This one actually uses digital special effects for a bunch of things rather than trying to do practical puppets in a lot of spots where they could. There's a lot of changes, and they're distinctly trying to make this new Saw. They don't want this to be the original Saw anymore. They've got rid of a lot of the editing choices, the color grading, the location style. If you're okay with that, if you want a soft reboot, then this is exciting. For me, this was the first Saw movie I saw in theaters. So I was super pumped to walk into this one and left being kind of disappointed. But at least I could follow the whole thing. I didn't need to have 6 movies before this that I inherently knew to know what the fuck was going on in this film.
Which is a big strength. I mean, you can actually, for the most part, skip from 3 to Jigsaw.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you could skip all the other ones. You could lose skip a lot all of them,
but yeah. But as far as like just the figure of John Kramer, him, you can kind of like watch just 4 of them instead of 8.
Also, I really like the visual we just got. You have close up with the eyes in the buckets. Like, that's a good Saw visual. Although all of this is.
I just love the starkness of this as the exact opposite of every other Saw room you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, this feels like a later Saw trap, but it also feels like it's pretty well done and interesting. Also a difference in philosophy, because all these people have to do is give a little bit of blood. Like, it's the easiest Saw trap to ever exist. You'd have saws in like 6 where it's like, well, if you don't cut off your arm to weigh down the scale, drills will pour through your skull. This one's like, if you cut yourself just even a little bit, you're fine.
Yeah. They really went into like an interesting direction with all of the traps being kind of like primordial remixes of traps from later. Like, this is 5 becomes 1 and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, and all of the different traps harken back to traps Jigsaw would eventually make.
Right. And that's the thing to keep an eye on. This is supposed to be before all of the other Saw, well, maybe not all of them, but very early in the chronology.
Right. Yeah.
So these are supposed to be a return to form in the Saw world, right? These should be more basic traps. They should be more like the reverse bear trap kind of thing. Anyways, now is as good time as any to get into our movie facts. Let me reel those off.
This
entry was directed by the Spierig brothers, identical twins Peter and Michael. They kind of became prominent for their first directing gig in 2003, The Undead. They also wrote and directed Daybreakers, which I think is kind of underseen. People should check that one out.
I dig Daybreakers. It's silly as shit, but it's a good time.
Yeah. And Predestination, which I thought was a really fun, twisty sci-fi movie. Great use of Ethan Hawke. Then they got this film. So this is, oh, I forgot. They also directed the 2018 Winchester, if you're into that.
The house goes built.
Yeah, I would recommend Daybreakers or Predestination first. Go for those two. This entry was written by Josh Stahlberg and Peter Goldfinger. Stahlberg would become kind of a Saw staple. He wrote this film, Spiral, from the Book of Saw, and Saw X. People kind of assumed he was going to write Saw 11 as well, but he had to step out from that. Oddly enough, Stahlberg had a background mixing comedy and horror with Good Luck Chuck, Sorority Row, and Piranha 3D.
Good one.
Thank you. Our cast, we've got Tobin Bell back as Jigsaw. But we have a lot of new faces this time, not a lot of connecting tissue like we've had in all the other Saw movies. So for the rest of our cast, we have Matt Passmore as Logan Nelson. He had some limited movie appearances before this, like Son of the Mask, but he was primarily a TV guy with roles in Last Man Standing, Lethal Weapon, Frayed, and 13 Reasons Why more recently. We have Callum Keith Rennie as Detective Halloran. He's been a longtime film and TV credit guy going back all the way to the early 90s. You can see him in stuff like Time Cop, Existenz, Memento, Blade Trinity, X-Files, I Want to Believe. Also an episode of X-Files, like a proper episode. And Goon, Last of the Enforcers. Highlander, the series, Battlestar Galactica, the reboot series, Supernatural, Smallville, Tin Man, CSI Miami, Jessica Jones, and even The Umbrella Academy. I feel like if you're filming in Canada, this guy's probably around and ready to go. And we also have Hannah Emily Anderson as Eleanor Bonneville. She's done a decent amount of genre work, including What Keeps You Alive, X-Men Dark Phoenix, The Curse of Audrey Irvinshaw. I've never heard of that one, so if someone could just make it up, I don't know. Dark Nature, and is playing Mary, actually, in the upcoming Return to Silent Hill, which I'm fairly excited about. I can't wait to go back to Silent Hill. And she was even in the first season of The Purge TV show. Our cinematography here, newcomer Ben Knott. He was the cinematographer for Predestination and Daybreakers, so he had a pretty strong working relationship with the Spierigs. I think he actually filmed all of their movies. So that's why he's here as our cinematographer. And you can tell this one has its own visual identity from any of the other Saws. It's doing its own thing. Our music is once again by Charlie Clauser, one of the few returning pieces, but we also have returning for editing, Kevin Greutert. I have no idea how they got Kevin back into the fold. If you saw our previous commentary for Saw 3D / Saw 7 / Saw the Final One, they forced Kevin to direct that movie. Like, legally, they pulled him off of Paranormal Activity 2 and stuck him onto Saw 7 like 2 weeks before they filmed. He was pissed. I have zero clue how they managed to bring him back into the fold. But he's been a part of, like, all the Saw movies. So maybe he just loves the franchise and his producers and whatever. I don't know. I would love to talk to the guy someday and be like, what was the process for getting you back on board the
how
Saw
much
train?
How much money can they offer you as an editor to come back for this?
I think he was like a late addition to the project, too. I think they had someone else lined up and he had to kind of step into the fold, if I'm remembering right. Saw Faithful will tell me a bit more on later if I got that wrong. This film was released October 27th, 2017, 7 years after Saw 7 came out. To put that in perspective, the first seven Saw movies came out once per year. So it was a 7 year span of Saw, 7 years without Saw, and now we're back. So that's a huge gap, which does make this feel like it should be a legacy sequel. And in some ways it is, because they get Tobin Bell back. But you can see they're clearly trying to lay out train tracks to take this franchise in a totally different, more thriller-centric direction.
Yeah.
Didn't pan out, but I appreciate
them
trying
ironic,
something new.
Which is ironic, considering that's kind of where it was supposed to start. But, you know.
Yeah, maybe a weird comparison, but I know the movie that was in my mind whenever I was watching this was David Bruckner's Hellraiser, which is a much stronger film than this, but it kind of has the same intention as Jigsaw, which is not so much to be, you know, a standalone movie in its own right, but just to set the stage for a new franchise for other people to build on.
It still just blows my mind, because look at this outdoor scene. You know, they just discovered the corpse of a guy. Hey, it's Logan. Only 11 minutes into the movie, we finally have, like, our main character. Look at all this, how bright and sunny it is, people outside having fun, dads and daughters playing catch. This is the same goddamn city that Saw 1 through 7 are supposed to be in. Isn't that wild? Like, all the claustrophobic, gritty, nasty atmosphere of the first seven Saws has been ejected, and it's like, no, the outside world was real. Just a normal, real world.
It's both a strength and a weakness.
It almost makes you
wonder why they didn't just say it takes place in a different city or something. But
I mean, they have the option to do that, but they reveal Jigsaw is buried, like, in this town where things happening. So, I don't know, maybe he got...
And the barn, of course, but they travel a bit for the...
Yeah, the barn is supposed to be, like, upstate, I guess. They have a throwaway line about that.
I think the scenes in the barn actually get the better of the change in style, where the slickness and the scenes in the barn look like a country video at times. I think that really offsets the horror very much. The scenes in the city outside, I like what they're going for, but it never feels like you're watching Saw unless you're in the traps.
Yeah. Well, it also, the way it kind of goes back and forth, we get into the, like, kind of the outer world and these bigger environments, but then we have to go back to these really claustrophobic rooms that are more just small and dark because of budget than anything else. And it doesn't feel like it plays on itself very well for that reason.
Well, to put it as simply as I can, the previous Saw movies are small movies trying to be big. Jigsaw is a big movie trying to look small. And it just, there's a disconnect there. This look probably would have paid dividends doing just a big, expansive, let's go around the city type story, like the original Saw 4.
Yeah.
If Saw 4 was like this, I'm mixed on that idea too, because what I loved about the original Saw trilogy is the way that the world reflects how fucked up the events
grungy,
of your Saw
this
plot
is. This is a little bit too slick. Like, it kind of ignores some of, I think that's even from the marketing standpoint, that was the thing that always kind of threw me off, was Jigsaw felt clean.
Yeah.
And even Spiral a few years later does not have that problem.
Yeah, everything around Jigsaw gets like the, even if it has to, you know, shrink itself because of budget or something and make the film overly claustrophobic.
I also love the introduction of the new Billy puppet with the evil glowing eyes and the dark.
The new Billy puppet is awesome.
J'accuse! I actually dig this. I think this works out pretty slick. Yeah. Like,
it's so epic.
It has that moment like, this is the trailer. They want you to know, like, Jigsaw's back, baby, as they slowly wheel the puppet
his
in.
Booties.
I love that this implies that immediately after this trap, Jigsaw decided that the eyes were too much.
He didn't want to be, he didn't want to be obtuse.
I'm putting a hat on a hat.
And this moment too, what the fuck? Oh, not creepy at all. God damn, I mentioned already, I love the trailer for this movie so much. The initial teaser had Roy Orbison saying, "Rang Scared." And I never felt so excited about a horror movie. Like, I was pumped. I dragged a friend who had never seen a Saw movie to this with me when it came out. He did not enjoy it. But it got me so pumped. And it was weird because it really didn't match up to the actual movie.
Yeah.
Like, not at all.
Yeah. Mike and I talked about it immediately after he'd watched it. Like, that is both one of the greatest horror trailers ever and also the worst ad campaign you could pull for this specific movie.
Yeah, right? I love that trailer too, but I never watched this because the movie looked tongue-in-cheek, comedic. It looked like it for some reason, it just always reminded me of the opening of Saw 7.
See, I was excited because of the tone they were presenting. I'm like, oh, I'm down for that. I normally like a little bit more fun than what a Saw typically offers in a film. So I was like, okay, this is appealing to me. The music choice is great. Like, that alone got me amped. But then, like, that one character, like, not creepy at all. It makes you think he's going to be, like, a kind of a plucky comic relief guy in the traps. And then you find out later, oh, no, he is a sexist piece of shit. Like, he's not funny, really, throughout the rest of the film. The trailer just gives him, like, one gold moment and shines on it.
Yeah, this is no difference in tone than any of the other Saw movies. Maybe slightly lighter, but I don't think that is even necessarily intentional. It just has more characters interacting.
Yeah.
And the, I think, even bigger factor, which is this, a thing I didn't realize until the credits rolled, which is, oh, this movie isn't called Jigsaw because Jigsaw is back after the reign of Hoffman. It's called Jigsaw because it's supposed to set up a new Jigsaw.
Yeah.
And the ad campaign just treated it as Jigsaw's back. Look at how much of a Tobin Bell there is in this movie, who doesn't show up until the very end, which you'd never know.
Well, the movie has a lot of fun hinting that Jigsaw might be back, which the eighth entry in the series, you're kind of wondering, like, okay, are they gonna do something silly like introduce a twin brother that got killed? Are they gonna?
They play with around
like,
with that
no, he's a zombie.
We saw him get an autopsy.
That's you can't walk it back, not in a realistic way. You have to go a clean slate reboot at that point, or do what they're doing now, where all the entries are different points of time. We're still getting some Saw background on these characters, and I shouldn't be talking over it, but I'm like one fun fact away from finishing our movie facts. So I'll just read that quick. This fascinated me. The budget for this film, $10 million. That's in line with most of the Saw films, excluding like one or seven. Seven costs $17 million about because they were using 3D technology. This movie looks so much better than all the other Saws and had the same amount of money seven years after those were wrapped up. It blows my mind. I guess that's what you get when you get like small budget indie guys working on a project and you give them $10 million. Like, holy shit. This is so much cash.
They know how to do it, and I assume maybe the producers weren't pocketing most of it.
Yeah. So this is wild. Like, this barely costs anything to make, and it looks really good. It doesn't look like a Saw movie, but it looks really slick. So our worldwide box office on that return of $10 million, $104 million, which surprised me as well, because I always thought Jigsaw was a huge flop, and that's why they never came back to it. It made $16.6 million opening weekend, which was actually the second lowest for the franchise at that point. But the Saw movies have been always pretty front-loaded. You know, they're for Halloween, and they come out the week of Halloween. Not as many people are seeing Saw in November. This one opened number one, but it took a 61% drop in weekend two and fell behind new releases A Bad Mom's Christmas and Thor Ragnarok. And this is maybe this is probably the reason why we never got a direct sequel to Jigsaw. The U.S. gross was only $38 million. The rest of that money came from overseas. So it's kind of a flip from how a lot of the other Saws had operated, where they mostly made money in America, and then half or less, I would say, was probably overseas gross.
There was next to no excitement from like the general public either.
Yeah, the reception wasn't great.
Yeah, like the general public did not latch on to wanting to see where this goes. Like a lot of Saw heads did, and are still kind of intrigued, even though this is probably never going to lead anywhere.
I can't imagine them bringing Logan back.
No, not at this point. Which makes this like such a strange island film. It's why when I finally watched it,
it's included in the anthology releases when they put all the DVDs out. Like they want you to remember this is a Saw movie, even though all the fans just kind of forget about it.
This is like the comparison. I told Jamie this. This is what like came into my mind when I finally watched this. Is I don't mean this in. When I make this comparison, it's not because of quality of script or quality of directing or anything like that. Hellraiser direct-to-video sequel.
Mm.
It's like the philosophy, like philosophically, it's a Hellraiser direct-to-video sequel where it's like,
we got Doug Bradley back, but he's not doing anything.
Yeah, it's like it's all stuff that some stuff looks like Saw, but something feels a little bit off and it kind of doesn't go anywhere and it feels very self-contained, not really attached to anything. And it's just Saw stuff happening. And I don't know. And it has the direct-to-video, like,
The sheen of a direct-to-video that gets me is when you can tell, like, it's people that are enthusiastic about the property, but it's none of the main people that were on the original.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how this feels, even though it's the same producers. It's, you know, but it's different directors, it's different writers.
And it has cast claustrophobia, where at the beginning you feel like we're going to have, like, a big sprawling cast. You see all the cops and all that. But when the mystery kicks in, you have the detective characters pointing towards the only other two people they have scenes with and going, they must be involved, which just makes the movie feel so fucking small.
That is weird, isn't it? Like they immediately assume someone else in the room was one of the killers. And going off that idea too, this trap series seems like it's going to be huge because we open with so many people in that first room, but one guy dies, you know, we find out later, spoilers, people, I don't know why you're watching this, first of all, that'd be insane. Logan, you know, is the first Buckethead. And then we automatically have this character killed in the first trap, and all of a sudden, this whole second trap is, it feels like it's over already. We have three people left?
Already down to three.
Yeah, it feels like it speeds through the whole trap series, but they have to drag it out because the mystery here needs to connect to the ending of the film. It's just wild that they're already down to three, and we know two of them have to go into a final trap together with 20 minutes in, and they've already reduced the pool this much. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, luckily, they actually do fill a lot of kind of everything between then and now with, like, a lot of good tension and playing up what feels like more classical Saw traps.
Hmm.
Instead of just like, and then someone gets eviscerated or something.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like we're suddenly in Cube where just a machine gun is going to come down and shoot somebody down at a random point. It also helps, and it's none of these characters are exactly like leaping off the script page, but it says a lot that of all the gangs of doofuses we've seen get eviscerated in these movies, I think I like this shitty D&D party the best.
I would say that, like, I'm kind of rooting for these guys.
They're all unlikable but not obnoxiously shit, so like most Saw victims.
It goes back to what, like, the first, honestly, mostly just the first film, which is just people who did some shit.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like cartoon characters like our main cop.
Yeah, to retread for a second though, I did like, it's tough to call it simple because it still involves people with chains across their neck being dragged up from the floor and they have to inject the correct syringe into their bodies to not die. So it's not really simple, but it's more direct than a lot of the other Saws and people suffocating from chains is like an inherent, like, oh boy, yeah, that's exciting, that's tension. And the flashback to what is a person's life worth, 353, I think that's a good solid through line.
Yeah.
And it works for me. Like, it's that's good. It's over pretty fast, and it's annoying because, again, the characters are basically designed like,
well, I know they don't the answer, actually, but I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, they don't talk to each other and they don't listen to each other, which you could say is inherent. I keep saying inherent. You could say is part of the Saw character design. Like, they never can. They can't be real people or the traps wouldn't work.
Yeah, but the traps do have a nice three-act structure to each one, which is what they really need.
I
just want to say real quick before we get away from it, the biggest sin of this movie is not putting more emphasis on that fucking window. Because if this were Saw 1, like, there would be so much drawn out of the fact that there's a fucking window with a pastoral farm setting outside that they can look at during all this madness.
Yeah, there's mileage there. Again, though, for $10 million, I think they are fucking running through this shoot. So they probably didn't even have time to really even focus on some of those ideas. One thing that throws me off, though, about the trap structure that we're in is we're going to find out, again, spoilers, I guess, one of the characters has a direct tie to Jigsaw. He sold Jigsaw's nephew a faulty bike and his nephew died. Which makes it feel like that guy should be the center point of the traps, because this is early John and he's kind of working out some shit, and there's a guy who killed his immediate family. You think that would be it? And there's a little bit of a twist later where we find out that our lead actress here set her baby up for murder, or murder baby, I don't know, whatever you want to say.
Set her baby up for murder.
He did it. Like, just imagine,
you're going away for it, kid.
Baby crimes a lot, sitting in the fucking electric chair like it's the same city.
That's how you end up with a pain.
Also, this is very frustrating because, like, Jigsaw is so fucking prescient. He made a special trap for this guy to randomly fall. Him specifically.
Him specifically in that one. He has to walk in that one spot.
In a special order. And this is a lot. I got away from the point I was trying to make about Jigsaw having personal beef with one guy, but instead going for his emotional truth later on. But goddamn, this part just doesn't work for me. They mentioned on the commentary too, like, what if you didn't sit there? Shut the fuck up!
Okay, this bugs me so much, hearing them say, oh, the directors really didn't do their job explaining why this trap would be here. And it's like, I don't know, Saw producers, why is there just a random trap where there shouldn't be? I wonder whose idea that was.
Now, if we can ignore the setup for this trap and how silly that is, at its core level, this is good. There's a simple choice in front of this guy where he has to take the inference that, hey, there's only one way out, and that's slicing your leg off. That's classic Saw. That's literally Saw 1. Hey, you can get out of this trap, got to cut your leg off, and, well, kill the other guy. Plus, it works. You know, the wires wrapped around this guy's leg and the pain he feels, they get tighter. The sound design, it works pretty slick. It did crack me up in the producer's commentary when they mentioned that also looks very sick. They mentioned that they're trying to model the sound design after 127 hours, which contains one of my all-time favorite, like, gross-out moments in cinema. So for people who haven't seen 127 hours, it's based on a true story where a mountain climber goes out by himself into the deserts of America. I think it's America. I don't remember. And a boulder falls on him and traps this guy, crushes his arm, and he's stuck there for days. He didn't tell anyone where he's going. So his only choice is eventually he has to take a dull pocket knife and cut his own arm off so he can escape this rock and get back to civilization. In that movie, Danny Boyle does this insane job of every time James Franco is trying to cut through his arm and he hits something like a nerve, the camera just kind of goes out of focus and fuzzy and shakes a little bit. And there's this high-pitched noise as he's cutting through the nerves. And it is more disturbing than anything I've ever seen in a Saw, to be honest.
It's when he takes the pliers and cuts through the tendons.
Yeah. And this is not a horror movie. This is mostly a drama. But the scene of Franco cutting his arm off is fucking masterclass cinema. Like, all horror directors need to focus in on that and be like, Jesus Christ, if I can't do this, I should maybe take a few more years in film school. So I can see what they're inspired by. They don't hit the mark in the same way, but Jesus, what a landmark. That, ooh, it still makes my teeth itch just thinking of that scene. So anyways, imagine this scene if that guy actually had that level of, like, tech overview where it was just nailing everything perfectly, and you're like, oh god, this guy's leg coming off is gonna be the worst thing in the world. Anyways, we're back to our B plot now. It's totally its own thing. Don't worry about it. The traps are over for a bit.
So just watching these two characters that will go on to do nothing sort of flirt for reasons.
Eleanor should have been the main character.
Eleanor, everyone likes Eleanor. Everyone would like more Eleanor. Maybe we're simps. But Logan just seems kind of like a nothing dude, even though they're modeling him after Jack Reacher before Jack Reacher.
Pretty right? much.
Like, he's an Iraq war veteran, Afghanistan, I forget which. He's a war veteran who was a medic, but he also apparently has fucking sniper experience or battle experience. He's been tortured. Like, he's like the cool guy can do everything with a tragic past. He lost his wife, but he still loves his daughter. It still makes him such a weird fit to be a Jigsaw.
He's basically the Punisher at that point. Especially his motivation that is not at any point really shown to be going too far or breaking, like, breaking the morality set up by the movies, which, again, that's... On the one hand, everything going on with Logan is really interesting for a Saw character, but specifically a Jigsaw that is that close to just being a full-on superhero kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think if I were in charge of the movies, what I would have done is, I know Saw is based on mystery. Fuck that. If you're doing a reboot and you're trying to get away from a lot of the Saw trappings, I would have set this up where we knew Logan was the guy immediately. And that becomes a tension act where, you know, he's trying to fool everyone else in here. Yeah, sure, you have to get rid of the idea that Jigsaw might still be around, but honestly, we all knew it wasn't going to be Jigsaw. We were all confused that I spent so much time insisting it could be him.
Yeah, that was never going to play as a gotcha. There's a lot of interesting meat on the bone there for Logan as a character, and going forward as a horror villain and a new Jigsaw. He's so different from what we've seen previously with John and with Hoffman and all that. And the fact that he has a different missionary response to it all.
Yeah.
So he's not a carbon copy of Jigsaw, which I think is key if you're going to have someone else continue. Like, okay, what else can you do that's in the wheelhouse, but the character brings something that is wholly unique to them, to John's overall ideology? And I think the idea of someone who does feel like he's not like punishing people to get them to turn around in the same way John was, or he's not just punishing people for them to die in the way Hoffman was. He still has like this noble pursuit of it with Hoffman's like killer instinct to it all, but he doesn't have the
right. Like, Hoffman would kill the medic like, he'd kill everyone around him to make sure he was safe.
And he'd get off on it. Like, he'd really enjoy it. Like, to
Logan's whole thing is like, he feels righteous.
Righteous about it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's his whole deal, which is an interesting Saw concept. It made Dexter run like 8 fucking seasons.
Hell, the most interesting thing raised by Logan's backstory is just the 5 seconds you see between him and John, where, as it stands in the movie, it's just Jigsaw saying some vaguely out of character shit. But the idea of John presenting himself as more of an anti-hero, specifically to Logan, because that's the button to push, is really fascinating.
Yeah, for sure. I'm taking over for a second to announce that I have finished the good cocktail, and I am now about to embark
Godspeed.
On the bad cocktail. I wish I had done this halfway through the movie instead of 33 minutes in. The other thing I want to mention before I take a sip of that, I figure if I keep talking, I don't have to drink. So I got to just keep going. I love the silo trap. I think this is a fucking great trap. It's silly. Yes. I fucking love it. Is it any more silly, I guess, than like a guy being drowned in liquefied pig guts? No. One, people actually die in grain silos all the fucking time. People don't realize, like,
grain
if you're in a...
Grain silos are really fucking dangerous for some reason.
Like, if you're in a grain silo and you think, oh, I can just walk along top. No, it's worse than the quicksand you were raised to be scared of as a kid. Also, see Barry season 4.
Be scared of silos the way, like, your grandparents were terrified of wells.
Don't fuck around with silos. Like, there is an incomprehensible amount of weight being dumped into this thing. Two, I like that this ties into the farm idea so much. Like, if you're going to give us a farm setting, you got to do some farm gimmicks. And killing people in a silo with one grain, two, like, pitchforks falling down, perfect. I love it. No notes. And three, they start with the grain falling down, and you realize it's just there to kind of anchor them in place so they can't run anywhere. And then metal instruments start falling from the ceiling,
it's
which
so
is very
great.
Funny because it means, like, probably a person has to be up there throwing shit down into
a chute.
The
image of John just throwing wrenches and shit. His robe.
One thing I am bummed about that they moved away from was when they filmed, they actually had moments where Tobin Bell was observing the events of the games through walls. Like he was observing that he had holes cut in areas, much like the earlier saws, where it's that voyeuristic idea that he gets off on seeing his victims go through the traps. And they cut all that because I thought it'd be a step too far. Like, it'd be hard to explain to the audience that John is there and he's watching them, and that's how he can set up the traps tailored to them specifically. They just wanted to imply it. So all those scenes were cut, and it sucks because that's half the fun, baby. We yeah. want to see Tobin Bell get off on basically watching these people be tortured. I think the old Scooby-Doo version of it where there's the eyeballs behind the portrait. I want to see that. I want to see that.
And it would also cause the problem of, I mean, we're supposed, even though the movie fails completely, we get, by this point, I think all of us on the first watch can understand, oh, what we're seeing is happening in the past. Which then we just wait for the movie to catch up to us, which is a problem.
With all those people not reacting to Jigsaw being back.
And so this is another problem I have with the movie, to cut you off, Mike, and it drives me insane. The fact that Logan set up an identical game we don't see with three out of five victims, because he has to be victim four and Holland has to be five. So he sets up a mini copy replica of the first trap that no one knew about, so he could put the corpses of those people out into the wild. What sense does it make?
He's fooling the audience, Cody.
It's
That's
very
it.
Involved.
It's directly at the audience. All of these little red herrings, like having to use a woman to die from the acid and trusting the trap will play out the exact goddamn same way as it did 10 years ago, isn't for any logical purpose. It's to be a trick to the audience. So they see...
It's for a gotcha, yeah.
Yeah, a woman got her heart burned out by an acid. We just saw that. These are on the same timeline. It's insane. Like, half the movie doesn't make sense if you were a character in the movie.
It's too much. It's too much. I mean, you can kind of like squint and go and add the ridiculousness of that to Logan's character of not even him being ridiculous, but him being kind of like so weirdly vindictive.
Yeah, but they established that fucking John Kramer is theatrical. That bitch loves theater.
Yeah.
We don't get the same sense from John, but he's even maybe more theatrical than Jigsaw ever was. It doesn't seem to line up with the character, and it drives me a little bonkers. It's like a Chris Nolan movie where you're watching and it's like, this all makes sense in the moment. And if you take 2 seconds to think about it afterwards, you're like, wait, why the fuck were they doing that?
I think
where did the Joker's truck come from?
Yeah, what is going on here? This seemed cool when I was in theaters, but it's been 20 minutes later and I'm eating a hamburger and now I don't get it.
I think one of the like most interesting facets of Logan as a Jigsaw character that unfortunately this would never be able to actually explore because you end on discovering that he's the new Jigsaw. So it would take a sequel to get into this, which we will never see. But the idea that he is, like, as Jamie said, he is like the Punisher version of Jigsaw in that he is insanely proficient. He is physically imposing. He's more of like a military tactician about this. Like, yeah. It's not just about like puzzles. That makes him like really terrifying and really interesting as a almost Hannibal like villain. And you can't get into any of that whenever he's the secret villain and we're supposed to think this is OG Jigsaw.
Yes, that's what I say before. It would have been much more interesting if we knew Logan was the killer from the start, which would have gone against Saw's principles where there has to be a big third act twist and there's got to be mystery. But I love the idea of what if for once we were in on it? Because Logan, compared to most of the other Jigsaw suspects, doesn't seem that bad a dude. Like, we have an inherent interest in him because he has a daughter, he's got a dead wife, he's a war veteran. He's got enough stuff going for him where audiences would be predisposed to be like, yeah, no, I want to see this guy win. So if he's setting all this up, we're probably thinking, like, they've got it coming. I want to see what the mystery is of what they did to him.
I remember whenever the MTV Scream series was announced, my first thought was, I am totally down for this if the idea is Billy and Stu are the main characters and we get to follow them as protagonists setting the shit up. Because that's a point of view you so very rarely get to see, especially in mastermind stories. You get the experience of being the mastermind through a third party. Like in Saw, that would be fascinating.
Horror movies need to look towards Death Note.
Exactly.
This all ties back to me watching the newest Treehouse of Terror. Okay, a couple things. We just saw a character willingly cut his leg off so the other characters could survive their trap. This is interesting for Saw. We have a character actually making an altruistic move. Like, he saved the lives of two guys that don't even like him and he doesn't like, because he would feel too guilty if they died. If anything, this should be a mark towards, like, hey, Jigsaw, your philosophy kind of works. You made a guy hurt himself to save others. Jigsaw completely ignores that later in the film. He basically chews this guy out for not confessing what a piece of shit he is. Which makes it feel like a weird trap where he just knew that this guy was going to have to cut his leg off to save the other people and it's not going to matter. The other half of it that bothers me, though, is since the movie is trying to be a little more thriller and a little less Saw, they have to cut back on some of the gore. And in this case, a man just had his leg literally ripped off, like his Final Destination 2 with the wire cutting through that guy. And there is almost no blood. They don't cauterize his wound or anything. They just kind of like wrap his stump up and leave him on a hay bale.
This is a shockingly almost bloodless Saw movie.
Right? Like, you should be thinking in your head, like, this guy's going to bleed out. So I hate to get into the realism complaint in a Saw movie because they've done some wild things. But if you're making a non-supernatural slasher franchise where your whole thing is people need to survive deadly traps, I think you need to actually include some of the medical realism that we've kind of come to expect. Like, they have to cauterize the wound, they have to tie off the arteries. They should be doing something much more gross than we see.
Well, the bleeding out thing is only kind of a problem because it's in a series that has paid very specific attention to the fact that nubs need to be burned.
Yeah.
Put that on a t-shirt.
In the previous movie, we even have Cary Elwes, like, shoving his stump across a steam pipe because he knows he's going to bleed out otherwise. He even mentions in Saw 1, like, I'm going to die unless I get help. So it's frustrating that the reboot's trying to tell you, hey, we're going to take a more lax idea on some of these things. People could lose limbs or eyes or whatever else and make it through a trap. Now,
just to interrupt, I want to say, how much do we want to bet that website is Jigsaw Rules with a Z?
I assumed.
I'm not judging this. My trivia team is Butts with a Z.
It should have been itsTheRules.com.
That'd be great. We do force the trivia guy to say the full name. You can't just say Butts. He has to say, and in third place, Butts with a Z. So here we kind of get a return to the classic Jigsaw coloring. I guess a little amber, a little green. Don't take my word for it. I'm colorblind.
In this scene that will be taken by the last Scream movie or something.
And done better, to be honest.
Much better.
This one, it solely exists to set this character up, Eleanor, as ooh, she's the secret Jigsaw. She's got a village of murder. And it turns out she's just a fangirl.
Yeah. In an alternate
universe. It's doing Saw 5 without the commentary before Saw 5. It's amazing how much Scream took from this and went, no, they just missed the mark. We could rewrite this into a strong thematic coupling.
Yeah. In an alternate universe, a sequel to this has Logan actually recruits Eleanor and have her be the one who builds shit.
I would like to see that in a sequel, in a Jigsaw 2. Because they leave her alive at the end, right? And she... they take the step of having her be the alibi to say that, no, Logan's innocent. It's Halloran who's the bad guy. She gets out and runs back to the cops.
Also, do we know why what I believe is Moon King is right on the door there?
I'm always confused. I don't know what that's referencing. It has to be like an inside joke with like the art department.
I'm also thrown off because you have to assume these characters are like in New York City or Washington, D.C. or something.
It's Jersey or Jersey, I think, is what Jersey-ish. Most people narrow it down to.
Yeah, and this fucking autopsy examiner somehow has enough money to have a separately leased building filled with a gigantic museum of things that probably cost thousands of dollars to move into place.
And this built the spiral trap.
The spiral trap is not cheap.
Where'd she find the time to do this? Also, how did she even get some of this shit?
Right. Like, you kind of forgive it when it's John Kramer because they set up, oh, he was a famous architect. So he's probably rich. This is like, fuck, man, I make good money. And I'm like, well, can I afford to keep my apartment? They raised the rent again this year. And I live in Madison, Wisconsin. I don't understand how these characters are so rich.
They can buy
the original fucking Jigsaw traps.
Like I said, it's one of those things that make me go, direct-to-video Hellraiser sequel.
Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of vibe.
It's frustrating because, like, logistically, it doesn't make sense. On paper, a character who's a suspect who has a Saw fetish and all of his old materials in a quasi-reboot makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Like, movie-wise, yeah, this is good mojo. This works. And if you're not into the movie's pocket, fuck, it all falls apart. If you were into this movie as much as you were Saw 1 or 2, you would not stop to question how she fucking owns the Saw Museum. You'd just be like, this is a cool idea.
Also, question, where's this happening on the timeline? Because we just saw Logan at that one place, and now he's here.
I have no idea.
This just bugs me.
Yeah.
Bugs me so much.
Wouldn't it be fun if they introduce a new Jigsaw killer, and then immediately he has, like, five fucking disciples, like the old Saws? Like, he has his own Detective Hoffman in Jigsaw 2 he's got to deal with.
So before we get too far away from it, I just want to say two things. One, it is my dream now to smoke a spliff surrounded by Jigsaw traps.
Yeah.
Two, I love that Rebecca does. She does the thing that is only done by fancy femme fatales in movies. She has her joints in a silver case pre-rolled.
See, the silver case always makes me think of Bugs Bunny and carrots. Always wanted to do that.
Oh, God, the wound!
Scars.
I like to include this because they're trying to play fair to us, right? They're trying to show, like, it's pre-damage, and they explain it as a war torture thing. But it is, in retrospect, a clue you could have been like, oh, I could have saw the movie if I paid attention. I like that they're trying to play fair with the mystery.
Well, here's a problem with that, though. We were kind of goofing on before we turned the recorder on. Logan, that plays into Logan's backstory, which we're seeing on a computer screen now. This is as much as we learn about Logan. This is a backstory you have to learn by pausing the DVD as this dude scrolls down and then assembling where all of this fits in the timeline based on context clues.
And it's a wild logical jump for Halloran to immediately jump to the corner of the case.
The only other person he talks to, yeah.
Right, this has got to be the killer. What? Is that how you do all murder investigations? You start with your inner circle, like you investigate your mom and then move out when she's like a non-viable suspect?
He crosses me off the top of the list.
It's weird. I don't want to make shit on Stahlberg. I think, like, I follow him on Twitter and he seems like a really wonderful guy. And there are some great parts of the Saw, but I don't know what happened behind the scenes or if there's always this idea and he didn't have time to change things. But there's a lot of silly shit that just doesn't quite, the dots don't connect.
Even with the gap between movies, I'm sure this had way less time to cook than it needed. Just by virtue of being a Lionsgate movie, B, a Saw movie.
Yeah.
They didn't so here we get the Hellboy reboot time to cook. Think about that.
Yeah. Thank God Del Toro could. Fuck, Golden Army is what a wonderful film. It's amazing what he put together. God, I'm sorry. I'm just thinking of Hellboy movies now. Del Toro, and what a fucking prince that man is.
Stream Pinocchio.
God, what a movie. Anyways, back to this thing. I have problems here. I feel like the angry, like the couch nerd from Conan O'Brien. Because everything I say here is just stupid technical. But I'm like, if this is Jigsaw's nephew, why is he like the third one killed? Shouldn't he be saved for the end? And I get it. The other idea is the woman killed her baby. John is going through a whole thing where he just lost his son and he was going through cancer. Thematically, it makes sense for him to be mad about that more so than his nephew, who he's never talked about before, dying.
It's just such a weird thing to add.
Why'd she have to throw in the nephew, yeah.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Jigsaw has a sister, I guess, he doesn't talk to.
Yeah, it's so weird because this is very personal to a man. And they just kind of forget about Mitch. Like, he doesn't even mention Mitch at the end. Like, he's just moving on. Like, hey, my next door neighbor was kind of a bitch. Killer.
Well, what's funny to think that the only reason this isn't the first death is because the actor Mandela Van Peebles, which is the greatest name I've ever heard, asked if he could
The son of famed director, too. Mario Van Peebles.
Which is the only reason they listened to him whenever he said, can I please not be the black dude who dies at the beginning of a horror movie?
Which, one, isn't even a trope anymore. Everyone's so aware of that trope. It's literally back to Scream 2 is why the black couple dies first, because they're trying to make fun of the idea that black people always die first in the movie. That's been a thing since 98. We've evolved past it.
Also, as the excellent Shudder documentary Horror Noir pointed out, the black guy is almost never the first to die. He's the second to last to die. The important thing is he dies. That's the part.
Yeah, exactly. Also, boy, great documentary. Two, I have never understood this fucking trap.
Yeah, it confuses me. It's all visual. It doesn't quite work the way. I mean, it's supposed to just get.
I hate it because it's on off. Like, he's supposed to reach through and hit the brake on the bike, which she does right there. But the trap doesn't stop because she stopped it. He has to actually hit that specific handle. And if he just put his arm straight down and got lowered, the trap's over. I don't understand what comes.
Why, he just stops?
It's not a willpower thing. It's not like a pain tolerance thing. It's all or nothing. If he just put his arm straight down and gotten lowered, he would have stopped the trap and it'd been over. Instead, he just gets spiralized for no goddamn reason. I hate this trap. This is my least favorite Saw trap.
It's all visual. It doesn't, and he can't really film it correctly because it's supposed to get narrower the closer to the bottom you get. But you can't really film that. You can't really film like all these insanely fast moving blades are this close to him. It's just no real way to visualize that in a film.
So he just kind of explodes.
I hate it. I hate it so much. It doesn't make logical sense. It's not that exciting to watch because I'm scratching my head as it's happening. Like, I don't
speaking
get
of logical
this.
Sense. So Logan just dug this up like
an yeah, no
hour
one notices
beforehand.
That. Yeah, and, no one notices.
And no one noticed that like there was just fresh dirt, I guess, on it. Because I mean, unless did he lay sod?
The producers talked not about like the fact that police should have been able to tell, hey, someone fucked with this dirt. Two, that this missing character that they're now finding in the grave, and they exhumed John Kramer, would be a thing they'd explore in Saw 2. To almost make it seem like this guy would have had his own Saw trap movie as the sequel to this that would have followed up. But that's also a little weird because they showed this guy in the grave without a shirt with the same bullet patchings from where he got shot. So they were hinting at the idea they wanted to use this guy for a sequel for traps. And then he would have been buried like he just got stolen from the hospital. And also his trap is running concurrent to all this other shit we're seeing right now in like 3 hours.
I think they were just saying things at that point.
It's if it had happened, it would have been such a head scratcher. Like, it would have fucked their chronology so much. This trap would have been 20 minutes long.
That is the logic of Saw producers. This random guy you see in this scene, maybe there's a trap for him down the line.
So that guy really, though, is the reason he's dead is because he has such a close tie to Logan. Right. This is the guy responsible for Logan's wife dying. Halloran set this guy free because they had their own history where he was the narc for Logan. Halloran. So the idea is getting back at Halloran for being the cause for all this downstream shit. And he kills that guy because he's the hands that did it. He should have been stopped earlier. Which the movie kind of wraps up. It gets to, but it doesn't explore that emotional connection because it has to maintain a mystery.
Yeah, the mystery kind of fucks stuff like that.
And the idea is that Jigsaw 2 would have closed in on this and had a much more emotional release between the characters, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't there. This is just my assumption. Which, sure, but they didn't leave themselves an actual timeline for that to make any goddamn sense. Also, for people that watched Jigsaw and were huge fans, you know he dies and he gets buried in Jigsaw's tomb. So there's not much tension. You know the guy's going to suffer and die.
It would make it like a good, cool short film, I guess, to see his side of the story, or like maybe like a special feature.
It's like a trailer or promo, sure. I feel like they're falling into the same trap where there's no foresight happening with Jigsaw. Like, they know they want this to be the start of a new trilogy. They're trying a new thing where new people can jump in. It's going to look more slick. It's going to be about the mystery. It's going to be a thriller. The gore is going to take a back seat, but it's still going to be there. It's going to be macabre. But it's a new series, new characters, new everything. But like the original fucking Saw, they didn't stop and think, hey, is it bad if we make like our big bad character have cancer? Or kill him in movie 3? Like, they would go to regret a lot of those choices. And I feel like it's similar here. They've set up a lot of cool stuff, and they've already closed off the avenues they should have left open to explore further. I would be more upset if there's a – if they had, I guess, because we know now, with hindsight, there's no Jigsaw 2. So they never would have closed off those avenues. But with the idea they were looking to make a franchise, it's insane to me they went about it in this particular way.
Yeah. Well, lack of foresight is like their mantra. I think it can be summed up with – in the commentary for this film, they're talking about – the end with Eleanor being found on the road. And they're talking about how we discuss whether or not who gets out of the car with her. Does she die? And I'm just in there listening to all this going, but literally the plot of the movie needs her to actually live. Like, that's the point of that happening.
Logan says the whole thing is she's telling the cops right now. Which should be like, what is Gordon going to show up? Like 10 years later, I've been waiting. I'm now a cop. There's 5 more apprentices who are all mad, and they all took a 10-year break. Now they're back, and they're upset.
It's a mystery box with nothing in it.
With 7 years to plan for this movie, it's absolutely bonkers that we didn't have a very intricate lineup set for like a 2 or 3 movie series that all made sense and connected. Also, for $10 million a pop, I don't give a shit if the public didn't like it. It was still going to make its money back if they put a 2 out. Yeah. They could have... If they wanted to, they could have really been producing these every single year from 2007 to now and still made a profit on each one.
Write a book sequel.
Well, God, we'll get into this more whenever we cover the next movie. But when Chris Rock went to Lionsgate with his Saw movie, he had ideas beyond just Spiral, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Like the idea, yeah, if I remember correctly, like he had a whole thing planned. Like, I cannot imagine. Even like when this movie came out, going up to Lionsgate and not having plans for where this goes from here. So it does make me wonder, were there plans that the people actually making the movie had that just were thrown in the toilet whenever the movie came and made a decent amount of money?
That's my understanding. So they had plans for Jigsaw 2, and the movie didn't hit the way they wanted to in the United States, didn't get the right reception. So they're trying to figure out what their next step was. And they still had plans for new Saw when they were approached by Rock to make a new movie. And they kind of went, okay, yeah, let's fast track this and forget about what we're doing. So there could have been totally different Saw movies, but they decided instead, hey, let's the last one didn't quite do what we wanted. Let's try rebooting again. We still have time.
Which is wild because you could kind of do both. I mean, they did the same thing with Spiral too. They were like, and let's use this to make a prequel to the first
the subtitle from the Book of Saw, you know, is trying to set up the idea that this is a big franchise. Everyone's dreaming too big for the moment. You got to make something good first. And then you can be like, no, here's the Book of Boba Fett. Yeah, you really have to set up the original first, get a fan base going before you can be like, here's 8 spinoffs. And I guess you could say they did that with 7 Saw movies before that made a shit ton of money. But with a 7-year gap, you're starting over at square one. I don't care about the original legacy.
Ugh. Also, just to make a Smallville joke, this is all happening in Clark's barn.
Again, it's still amazing that this movie is now an hour in. And I mentioned before at the 20-minute mark, we only had 3 characters left, and now there's 2 characters left.
And the other one is someone who you expect to have. He's lost a leg, and also he's a character you would have expected to have died 3 people ago.
It's impressive they managed to make it this long. And then we get fucking John Kramer, the reveal. I will say, from a personal experience, again, this was my first Saw movie in theaters. I knew about the other ones, and I had started watching them in college when they'd already been like out for years. This is my first one in theaters. And I'm sitting there the whole time like, John Kramer's not coming back. I knew it. I was convinced. And then they showed this scene where he does the dramatic head turn in the hood pull. I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, he's got the old hairdo.
He has the soul patch. This is bullshit.
He has the soul patch. This is back in time. And all my like thoughts about the movie were confirmed. Which, this movie is an hour and like a half long, like hour 31, 32. At the hour mark, like this scene happens, I'm like, oh, I know exactly everything that's going to happen. I understand all of it now. Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great because this gives, doesn't work. This gives John Kramer a lot to do, really, because the last third of the movie is his. And we get it's so much better than like Saw 7, where he shows up in a backwards baseball hat to accost a fucking scammer. This feels good if you're a fan of John Kramer. This is meaty stuff for him to work with. It's really good. I love this little section. Does it hurt the rest of the film, though? I would say yes. I think the hell-bent determination to include him at this point and make it a twist before we find out, no, it's a timeline thing.
No, the dynamite. Sorry.
This is such a funny... This is a Halloween 2 Ben Tramer death joke. Like, it's so goddamn stupid. Sorry. These exploding trucks are so bad. So I would say this amazing 5-minute scene of John Kramer is built in and kills the rest of the movie. I think they fucking slaughtered their chances of a franchise of Jigsaw so they can include the original Saw and highlight it. Then again, if they did it the other way, would we be happy if it was just plain Jigsaw without any Kramer? They might have just planned for the fucking sequel and the franchise would have been shit. This is a great scene. This belongs in with the other Saw movies.
I think this would have worked a lot better if, well, one thing, you kept John being in the movie out of the trailer, so you're not watching the entire movie going, how is this going to work out?
Yeah, when does he actually show up? Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't, maybe put this a little further towards the end of the film, where this and the reveal of Logan are kind of back to back, if not overlapping.
Yeah.
Because again, the second John walks out, everyone in the audience is going, oh, it's a flashback.
Or you can even play it as everyone else in the movie is very like straightforward. No, like Jigsaw's dead. Like, we've seen his body. We saw him ripped open. He's fucking dead. Then you can kind of play for a moment of maybe Jigsaw's alive when he shows back up.
Also, I just want to say, I love that John designed the tricycle, which is in character.
He doesn't want to buy any old tricycle. He wants to build it with his bare hands. Also, I don't know why John was like 99 in that one shot. So weird.
Also, this is like watching Saw 10. Like, why is John fucking 30 years older than he should be in this scene?
It is hilarious in the commentary hearing them try to sell that. Like, oh man, did he get younger between movies? No.
He's in the best shape of his life.
Clearly 10 years have passed.
That's
I'm
not
sorry,
to say Tobin Bell is not built really well for some reason.
Yeah, no, this guy in his 70s at this time, he looks fantastic and he is killing the role. I honestly think, like, the reason we're all mad about the Saw franchise is they didn't design it in a way where Tobin Bell got to just do this for 40 minutes and then murder people for the other, like, 80.
It's what we want. Look at that smile.
He's so good. He's such a great actor, and he's so menacing, and he you know, it's the Hannibal Lecter thing. He could take anything and make it watchable. It's so good, and that's why we demand he's in movies, even if it doesn't make sense or if it hurts the rest of the film. The little bits he gives are hypnotic, and they're so confident. This is a guy who believes the character he's playing. It's good. It's so good.
Also, I'm sorry. I might be missing something, but this has been bugging me for like 2 weeks straight. Considering,
Jamie, before you ask it, the answer is no. No one thought about it. They did a shitty job implementing it.
Well,
what was the actual thing?
The answer, but. Considering John does not have either of his medical henchmen yet, or Hoffman, how does he know that that lady killed her baby? Spider sense?
So they go into... I can't believe I'm fucking defending Jigsaw. I thought about that too. They go into the fact that his house is apparently so close to theirs, he can hear them fighting while he's like drawing away. So the idea they've planted is he can hear when they're saying shit or doing weird stuff, and his knowledge of the case doesn't line up with the actual like police report. Some of that's hinted. A lot it's not given to you, it's not spoon-fed. It's just supposed to be like you're supposed to believe John is so intuitive, he understood the situation that she was always yelling about the baby, that she was the one to set the baby up for death.
Yeah, it's a you do the screenwriting work kind of situation.
Also, I love her Kelly Sue DeConnick cosplay for this one scene.
The jigsaw pieces.
And we never see this cop again.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that so fucking... He calls up like, we got to do something about this. And then they tie this back to the original trilogy lore by saying, this is Jill's family's house. So apparently Jill was the one with money? Maybe they're both rich.
I think they were both rich or something.
I guess. Well, that makes sense. You know, you don't see like millionaires like dating someone who's like, in the gutter. It's not an Aladdin situation. You'd really need Genie to like get a rich person to notice you.
Honestly, I don't understand why the person who found Eleanor on the road wasn't the cop.
It would have been. Yeah, I think that was probably a timing thing. Like they just had so little time to film it, and who was on staff that day, they probably just didn't bother to call that guy and pay his fee.
Also this, where we just see that everything's rusty. Like, I mean, at this point, the audience has,
they know.
Before Jigsaw actually showed up, everyone had mostly figured out,
right.
Oh, well, this is, especially because based on past Saw logic, this is happening in the past.
Yeah, the well, they try the to bodies, set up, because he says, like, oh, we fought, oh, blood. But we find out he did another trap for our benefit that we don't see.
Also, there is the elephant in the room, which is the fact that if this weren't a flashback, Jigsaw was getting them bodies out of that barn pretty goddamn fast.
Super fast for
just,
like,
just
you know,
rushing
a cancer
back and
patient.
Forth from the country to the city in his truck. Oh god, we're almost done with this, the leg trap.
Oh no.
That's why he just runs into the top of the silo and just starts throwing things.
Corn cobs, what do I have? Throw them down there.
Mystery does not work.
No. It fits the Saw theme. They're trying to condition a new set of audience members to appreciate that if there are more Saws, they're going to have this setup. There's going to be these weird time shifts. There's going to be big twists. Unfortunately, I don't think the twists have the same impact if you don't do it like the previous Saws, where you have a minute of flashbacks and dramatic Charlie Clouser music. Like, you just need to fucking edit this to the hilt to impress upon people. All the characters are whipping their heads back and forth trying to understand. They don't
you
do
have to
here.
Make the reveal cool. There's nothing cool about this reveal.
No, not at all.
There's nothing cool about Logan.
So just imagine, though, there was a Jigsaw 2. And here's the pitch I would have had. Who knows if this would have ever been something anyone would have wanted to see, but my idea is we're doing a soft reboot here, right, of the Saw movies. Sorry, I have to interrupt myself. Jigsaw loading the shotgun after we saw him pressing the goddamn key and them still pulling the trigger is one of those bitch, were you paying attention?
Yeah.
Moment. Like, he fucking told you the whole clue with innuendo, and you saw him put the fucking... come on! So I hate this trap. It's supposed to be the characters are dumb and short-sighted, and that's why they both end up dying.
The idea of a reverse fire shotgun is genius. It's
it's fucking brilliant. I love it so much.
It works as an idea, but it's frustrating. It's like, God damn it, you should know better. You're dumb characters. You deserve this.
Also, I love how it does come, like, the entire film ends on a essentially Saw 1 room trap.
And it's nice, too. Even the camera work is different than the original Saw, because they have time. They move around John. They kind of spin around him. It lets you get enveloped in his speech as he talks to them. They give him his due. There's a lot of respect paid to Tobin Bell, and I love that. I forgot the thing I was bitching about before, though. I had a thing.
Is it about how we're 1:10 into the movie and we're at the end? Like, it's weird. The movie.
There's still 20 minutes left, but that trap's done.
It's like the last Saw movie where the movie ends and then Hoffman just kind of does stuff for 15 minutes.
Yeah. They fucked up. There needed to be one more trap in the actual like past game sequence to really pad this out to match. But I feel that strongly.
The problem is, like, other than like Logan being revealed, the audience kind of just has everything now.
Right.
And already knows that trap's clearly understands that trap's in the past. So now we're just waiting for these scenes to catch up with that fact.
It's 20 minutes of that. You're waiting for the movie to catch up to you. And it's
brutal.
It's got to be the other way around. You're always, as the audience, supposed to be catching up to the movie. You got to... Fuck, that's why the Knives Out movies are so good, because it feels like I'm always a couple steps behind. But I remember what I was complaining about before. And it wasn't even a complaint. It's the idea, if there was a Jigsaw 2, wouldn't it be fun if they set up Logan as a character who is literally a copycat of Jigsaw? Like, imagine Jigsaw 2 is him literally doing the traps from Saw 2.
Oh, I've always wanted to see a Saw movie, like, with the gimmick of it's just, like, it's recreations of traps from previous movies, but with twists.
Well, my idea would be, so you do Saw 2 again. He sets it up the same exact fucking way, and then it goes completely different because he doesn't understand people the same way John Kramer does. So, like, he just sets the traps up, and he gets the wrong people in the trap. And all the traps go fucking haywire, and he has to intervene. So you end up with more of a collector energy than a Saw energy.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's too late. That's my pitch for Jigsaw 2, the movie that'll never happen.
So, okay, so here's one of my problems with Logan. He is, if Riley from Buffy the Vampire Slayer went evil, and this bothers me, I'm sure the actor is a great human being. He is so goddamn miscast.
Oh, God. I don't know if you guys felt this. I kept referring to Logan as Adam, despite the fact that there's already an Adam in this franchise, because Matt Passmore just looks like a dude named Adam.
Yeah.
Like a romantic comedy. Like he has or Kyle energy.
Like Adam from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Like, yeah, Matt, I don't want to talk shit about the guy, but he just... Yeah, I don't think he's a good fit for this... I don't think they made a good character for him to inhibit.
He has that Colin Ferguson-like quality. He's born to be the lame dad on, like, a small-town cop show or a sitcom. And I imagine that's part of the reason he was cast. He has an extremely unassuming energy, but watch that last scene, and... Yeah, I could not imagine another movie with that performance being evil. Where he just seems like he's annoyed at the unfurling of his plan. Yeah, you didn't think I'd be Jigsaw, did you? Shows what you know.
So here we go. It's our first trap, but it's set in like fairly, like you wouldn't even realize this is a flashback if you, it needs the stylistic touch we saw in the previous ones. This is a complaint I've also made about Evil Dead, the remake. A great movie, and if you'd never seen Evil Dead, you'd be gaga over it. But if you're expecting an Evil Dead film, I think Fetty's version is too slick. Like, it just doesn't have the shittiness of the cinematography that we expected from Evil Dead 1.
Which is weird.
And this is my Evil problem Dead with Jigsaw. Rocks. This is very smooth. And it's like, this feels wrong. There needs to be some weird, like, shaky head flashbacks to you, like, figuring all this shit out in a voiceover. And it's very stoic. It's its own thing.
But it's also kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Sure. I understand that is a problem.
So it's hard, I think, when you're making it to know what the right choice is. Like, do you go in that direction? Do you hold back? Do you try to do something new? Because it could go either way.
Yeah, the popularity fell off. It's been 7 years. We should try something new. I get, and that makes perfect sense. But on the other hand, it's like people came to your movies because there were certain aspects of it they really loved. And it's fascinating to watch this movie because you realize the filmmakers pick and choose which aspects they think the audience wants again. And they're not quite the ones that me personally, an audience, wants.
That's funny. I think, ironically enough, the happy medium to what you're talking about is a movie like Evil Dead Rise, which has a lot of the slickness of Alvarez's Evil Dead, but there's a very grungy, slimy, like almost video nasty quality where you kind of feel like you're watching like a really expensive foreign horror movie that's going to go to a bunch of places that you're not expecting, like just from the look of it.
Which Evil Dead Rise. I love
being demons too.
Yes. So that's the main thing. I got out of that movie. My first thought was I just saw a Demons 3. I didn't see an Evil Dead like 5. But I wasn't mad about that. Like, it really worked. I just felt like, oh, they lied to me. They said this was Evil Dead and it's Demons.
I think there is a way to blend those two, like have the sleekness and the grime at the same time. Yeah. It's just finding the right director that can find that sweet spot.
Well, I think so. The producers are so important in this franchise. They're, you know, it's like a Marvel film. The producer is basically making it and the director adds some flourishes. In this case, they gave the director a little more power because it's a reboot. So he brought in some of his talent to help make the film and shaped it in his own ways. But boy, it's got to be tough. What side do you go on? Are you more slavish to the original? And I guess in terms of plot, they kind of went that way because, right, Tobin Bell still gets a starring role. They're trying to tie this into the original series while adding a new out. So if they want to do more, they can. But on the filmmaking side, they've decided to abandon the originals. We don't have the color palette. We don't have the filming style. We don't have the editing style. It's totally different. And I would say audiences are more aboard the superficial than anything else. So if you're trying to please old school fans, you got to make it look and operate on a cinematic level like the original, which they didn't in this. Is that bad? I guess you could say yes, because they didn't make a sequel to this one. It didn't catch on with American audiences. As a latecomer to the Saw franchise, I appreciate this. I thought this was a cool modern way to tell the story. But when you watch the other Saws, it clearly doesn't fit in and makes this one feel like it's ancillary. Like, you could cut this off and it wouldn't matter, which a lot of fans have done. Also, this is a big jump here, introducing the idea of kind of sci-fi weapons. This is the Saw Goes to Space moment of the Saw franchise.
As I wrote in my notes, it took Hellraiser only 4 movies to involve lasers. Saw lasted till 8.
Yeah. And they'd seeded this, right? Because earlier in the movie, in the coroner's office, they have a moment where someone's using a laser cutting to open up a body. So it's not out of the blue. They did their homework. It's a Chekhov's gun. But it still feels so out of place for how rudimentary the rest of the Saw films have treated their traps. Again, I'm sure that's an intentional decision to set this as a separate entry or a new mile marker for the Saw films. Do you accept that as a fan is a different question, but from a filmmaking perspective, I understand why they went that route.
Well, here's what frustrates me about the flashback twist, which is the sleek spaceship design of the first room is in keeping with everything we see from Logan later. So the idea of Logan's traps in particular having a signature style of being super sleek and metallic and kind of the opposite of like the iron, grungy, almost steampunk shit we saw from John and Hoffman. That's really cool. That original room just being Jigsaw's first room kind of fucks that.
It doesn't make a lot of sense because that was Jigsaw's idea. Another thing I want to throw out here.
Feeling like an escalation where like if you saw that entirely as Logan's signature, maybe you would have, it would be a little more viable of, oh, like everything related to him is sleek and scientific. So him, you know, using, you know, hijacked medical equipment. I buy that.
Sure. This scene though, right here, this gets me going both ways. I'm frustrated and also appreciative of it. I like there's the theatricality of Logan faking his own death to make this guy confess to his sins. But his whole setup is he sent his friend to go contact the cops to come back to show that this guy is setting up all the saw traps. But he's going to be dead. Like, he's dead. Like, a guy got him in a saw trap. He's going to be covered in fake blood? Unless he has a sink he can wash his face off of quick and a place to burn his blood-soaked shirt.
I mean, I like to think if he put all this other stuff together, he put a change of clothes in a drawer somewhere.
But it also is very silly, like, well, he should have just made the trap so no matter what button the guy hit, Halloran was the first one to go. They do it for the audience's sake, again, right? Like, it's a trap. Like, oh, he's supposed to notice very the burn black marks on the ceiling. I appreciate the idea that the filmmakers are saying, hey, look, instead of flashbacks, we're teaching you by making you look at the clues like Halloran is. But it's also so much of a pat on the back. We're like, look at the laser marks on the ceiling. Ah, we're clever. Also, how do we feel about John just like, oh, well, this guy's passed out.
There's something.
No.
We know that he is right behind the door and all the traps, but actually seeing him rush in from around the corner is hilarious.
Like, oh, I fucked up. Oh, this guy, he's all right. It's so weird because this is like a fucking real Saw storyline where Jigsaw, John Kramer, has to reconsider his philosophy in the moment on the fly to save a man and make him an apprentice.
Actually,
a guy
like
who essentially
that.
Doomed him. I do too. It just feels out of place in this movie because they don't have the time to dedicate to it.
That's something you have to watch within the context of knowing the entire story up until this point and knowing John and knowing like, okay, if this is like the second trap he ever did after Cecil, that this is a moment where he realizes, okay, there is literally just, this is only revenge. Like, he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
I also like the idea of John showing sympathy for someone just because he fucked up his saw trap. And that's not fair.
He fucked up something and realizes that he's punishing this guy for the same basic mistake. It's a really nice, like, humanizing moment for Jigsaw. It just, unfortunately, is kind of lost amongst, like, everything that's happening right now.
Yeah. It works better into Saw 10. Like, that's the John Kramer we expect to see from Saw 10. So, the series, again, taken as a whole, yeah, it's a good moment. By itself, it's like, what the fuck is happening?
So, how confused must people have been walking out of the theater wondering where the fuck Logan was during the Saw movies? Because the detail of him being tortured overseas during the original franchise is on a computer screen.
Yeah, I was very confused the first time until I discovered that information. Like, oh, that completely breaks the timeline. He's another secret apprentice. No, he's not an apprentice at all. He was away. He was mostly hospitalized during the events of the entire original series.
Which retroactively makes Logan interesting when you realize, oh, like John was kind of training him as an apprentice. Then he was, then he went to Iraq. Then the torture completely devastated him. And what John taught him was all he had whenever he came back. That's interesting. The idea of someone John has trained, then being taken from him and becoming something he never anticipated, like, in a completely different context. I get that. So much interesting
ideas. You're talking about a
movie
that's way more in depth than anything we've ever gotten. You're talking about like an actual goddamn film.
That's the thing. It's all there. Like, there's a story Bible. All this stuff is there. That's what's so frustrating about it is none of it's in the movie.
Yeah. The other thing is the animosity towards Halloran. We get that he's an asshole, but at no point while watching this film was I like, God damn, I can't wait for someone to murder this motherfucker.
It's weird,
he looks like he's trying to do his job during this investigation, like, really hard, even against corruption from the fucking, like, mayor's office trying to tell him no because they're going to be running for higher office later. It's very weird. Also, we were bitching about this earlier, and I got to mention it now because it drives me insane. When Logan does his I speak for the dead speech, I think it's an artistic choice that they just couldn't edit in well, but his eye line's all fucked up, so it doesn't look like it's personal. Like, he's just stating this to the void before he closes the door.
And his version of evil is being, like, really monotone and deadpan, and it doesn't really...
He's the Punisher.
Work.
Like you guys were saying, he's the Punisher.
Yeah. Who am I? I'm Spider-Man speech. As if the actor himself isn't aware that he's a horror movie character.
Also, I like that line. Together, we built a legacy. Weren't you in a war?
You seem to have built that one thing based on the plot.
And it's also not like Logan's bringing his expertise to build these traps. It's hinted that, like, fucking Kramer showed him everything. So here's another thing. How do you guys feel about the CGI used in this? Because we get a more creative kill. Like, it's pretty gnarly on paper that this guy's head splits open like a flower, but...
It's a little bit too big, I think, the overhead shot, but I would have liked to have seen it, obviously, as a practical effect. But it is cool and gnarly.
It's something I've never seen before.
Yeah. It reminds me of Evil Dead, the TV show, where there's a moment in the first season where a character is killed by... Bruce Campbell jumping on top of them with a harp on their head, and the strings slice their face, and their head separates like pieces of bread that have just been run through a cutter. And they made a gelatin head to do this effect, and it works really good. It's such a good kill. This one, it's clearly meant to be CGI because they have like even – it doesn't even look like blood. It looks like water pumping through his throat. It's a big, grand, cool idea. That's too far ahead of the effects of the time, I guess.
Yeah.
I would have taken a really bad dummy head with an actual, like, piano wire setup being run through it more than I think the CGI effect we ended up with.
Definitely. Honestly, if you had to cut around a not-so-great physical effect, it would have been better than just the... Once again, it looks visually very cool. Like, the design of it's great. It just looks fake.
And part of my problem is if you look at even the other bits of gore in the movie, like the original bucket head who has half his head somehow sawn off, but the bucket's still attached to his head. It's just presented to be gross. Like, it's in the movie. It's never a shock. It's never meant to be like so macabre people will throw up or anything. It's just there to be kind of gross in passing. And I would worry that if they had to do the flower effect as a physical, they would do it in the same way where they make it such a passive experience. You're not shocked.
It's possible. Yeah. I do want to say I love Buckethead's design. Like, I want that puppet so bad.
Buckethead is a fun idea. I really like that as a trap. The idea that everyone's a mystery to everyone else. You have this bucket on top of you and all you can see are your eyes is very yellow. Whatever you want to say it as. That's cool. Visually cool and saw appropriate. They really nailed it on the head for that first trap. Plus, like I said before, I think it's interesting that they introduced a trap where it's that easy to get out of. You're overthinking it if you like saw off an arm. You just have to be like, hey man, I'll take my little bit of pain and get my paper cut. No. There's... Again, I've been very critical of this, maybe more so than any of the other commentaries. But I would rank this clearly in the middle of the pack of Saw films. It comes down to how much you want this to be Saw and how much you want this to be a functional movie. I think this is, you know, a C-minus movie, and I think it's maybe a D Saw. That's unfair. I'd say probably a C movie, like a C thriller, because there's some weird plot holes, but it all holds together in the moment pretty well. And like a D Saw.
I don't know where I'd place it because on the one hand, yeah, decent movie. I can't really say like I walk away like not getting a Saw movie, but even the sequels that are technically worse than this have a manic energy that I enjoy. this...
They're serving a purpose. They're all connected to the previous Saws, and they lead to the next Saw. So if you watch something like Saw 5, you're like, yeah, this sucked, but... It's not one episode. You gotta see the whole series for this to work.
It's comparing the 90s Super Mario movie to the recent Super Mario movie, where, yeah, the Illumination one's better, but it's kind of factory perfect.
Yes, that gets down to it. Do you want to watch something that's well-made but not inspired? Or do you want to watch something that's honestly kind of shitty, but you're not going to see anything else like it because it's made by clearly faulty human hands? And I'm torn by that too, because I like this movie quite a bit, despite how I talk about it.
It's fun. Like, I'm not going to say it's not fun. The traps part is great. Like, there's plenty of really good classic Saw stuff.
Better than a lot of the other Saw movies do their Saws.
It's better than 7.
Yeah. I'll say, I do give this movie a lot of credit. One thing I think it does deserve credit for, it is significantly less mean-spirited than most yes. Saw sequels, which, and some of that comes from the more, like, moralizing tone. But it is nice to see a Saw movie that's not, especially after 7, that's not obsessed with tormenting the innocent. Even yeah, if that yeah. is ostensibly what, like, at least Hoffman's thing was supposed to be.
And it feels like we talked shit about the producers for a while now, to the point where I'm sure they're listening and they're sending strongly worded letters to our addresses. It feels like they've learned from some of our complaints, because Saw 7, one of the big complaints, right, was the misogyny inherent in it, and killing Jill twice and making her character pretty much useless and just kind of a tool for Hoffman to exploit for audience's benefit. This movie has a sexist character that we're supposed to not like, who gets his comeuppance at the end because he's such a sexist, she won't listen to him. No. So it almost feels like they're listening to us on some of the issues you bring up, like, hey, man, that's a little fucked. Is that just you or is that the movies? And they went, no, we're not that bad. We understand that, like, these characters are assholes. Here's a movie that really presents sexism in, like, a back burner fashion, but it's there.
Yeah, honestly, the worst thing I could say about this script, and unfortunately, this is just a society problem, which is please, please, please stop demonizing new mothers who have mental health issues. Postpartum depression is some real shit.
Yeah, that's a weird one for John to be like, I have no understanding. I didn't talk to her on the side. I just abducted her and put her into a trap after she was real nice to me for multiple months.
Like, that's
I was having a hell of a time, and you were the only thing that kept me alive. Anyways, here's the trap I put you in. I think you killed your baby. Fuck you. It's a weird head twist. But John is also not supposed to be perfect. So
he's a serial killer. Yeah. I do appreciate how dark they went with it. Like, I like when movies don't hold back in regards to that stuff, and at least, like, go for it.
That's the problem, that this isn't tied closer to the rest of the Saw franchise. Because if it was, you would definitely revert back to the idea that someone killing their newborn is the worst thing in the world to John Kramer. John Kramer, who lost his baby and caused him to become a serial killer on a scale
unknown. That would be the whole point of the film, yeah.
Right. That's such a big deal. But it's underplayed so much in this one, you kind of scratch your head going, hey, why didn't Jigsaw put his nephew's killer into the last trap? Why did he design it this way? And I get frustrated about that. Because from a legacy standpoint, it makes sense. From a reboot watcher's point of mind, it doesn't make sense. And I was a reboot watcher. I watched this, again, first time in theaters, scratch my head going, yeah, I kind of get it, but this is weird. I wouldn't have wrote it this way. I don't know.
It's weird. That's a good way to really sum up the entire film.
I don't know.
It's
Prime
weird.
Video just ended, and it has the tags as horror, suspense, strange, and terrifying.
I think it's more strange and terrifying than Logan.
Strange is the third one they have, and it's not even linked. Like, you can click on suspense, and it'll take you to suspense movies, or horror, and it'll take you to horror movies. There's not a Amazon Prime strange category of movies. They just listed it that way.
So, someone doing admin that day was having a good time.
Strange, terrifying, it's weird, Jerry, don't worry about it. I don't know, I criticize Saw, the Jigsaw, a lot because it was a chance to make a clean break from the franchise and set up something new, where we got a new Saw every year for 7 years, and it didn't happen.
It's not a bad movie. It's just really frustrating.
It's not a bad movie. It's the wrong movie.
That's it. They were making a Saw that's a 7. And audiences didn't go for it. It was the wrong time. It didn't fit right. It's weird. It is strange. They could have. This is the power of hindsight, right? Because watching it now after two more Saw movies and seeing what did and did not work, you have strong opinions about what they should have done. They didn't know at the time. 7 years had passed. They didn't know if anyone would go see a Saw movie at the time this came out. And they kind of went middle of the road on the idea of a remake. They didn't totally remake it because it had only been 7 years, so it's still tied into the original, probably too closely. They sacrificed some of the fidelity of their own movie to put some of those throwbacks in with Tobin Bell. And in the end, they ended up with a movie that didn't please either side. If you think Saw fans are more powerful than general audiences, you were bummed out. This one didn't look and operate like the Saws you expected. If you're a new audience member coming in, general audience, you look at this and went, what the fuck is this? I have to actually know some of the other shit? And this seems weird. Some of this doesn't connect. I think they fix this later on, right? Spiral, they take the idea of we're going totally separate. We're just going to make a new movie. And Saw 10, they went back to the original formula. Saw 10 obviously won out with the public more. I think it's a better made film. And oddly enough, by being servicing to their small core of fans, they made a more universal project. I don't get that, but it the money bears it out.
Whatever works. I do think ultimately, like, it's pretty cool. It's like something like Jigsaw exists and Spiral to another adjacent extent is we always talk about, well, like a lot of these horror franchises, like, it would be cool if they like did like this wild thing off to the side or like did this shift, like, you know, Tommy Jarvis becoming like Jason Voorhees or, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. All of these like do
we
something
so much,
else.
We have so much hindsight though, which is really the power. Yeah, yeah. Like, you just imagine, wouldn't it be cool if they didn't fuck around the way they did?
But Jigsaw is ultimately like a movie that did actually kind of try that. Like, let's do sort of a side story. That's a part of this whole thing that could go somewhere. And it doesn't work as I think it would have worked ultimately better if it did have a sequel and was able to expand upon itself. But for the most part, it does kind of work as an island. It just unfortunately is like such a weird island that it doesn't matter. You could just leave it out of a box set if you wanted.
Well, it's just fascinating to think that between this and Spiral, like, there are all these seeds planted for Saw movies much further down the road. Like, you could make an entire Saw sequel franchise just out of tying up loose ends from other points of the series, especially considering the, at this point, network of Jigsaw apprentices and sub-apprentices that there are right now, especially if you're factoring in things that were filmed and just aren't in the movies, like the dudes from the Saw 7 trap being Gordon's henchman at the end of 7. Like, you could make a movie about an entire nation that has been taken, that has been grasped by Jigsaw fever, and that would make sense with what as you've established so far. So none of these seeds lead to the next sequel, but they've planted a lot of seeds that may pay off a very long time from now.
We'll have to see what happens in Saw 11. Maybe they pick all this up and put it into one film.
You almost kind of just want there to be like a Saw streaming show where it's kind of anthology-like, and you just like pick up on all these little things that are now left out in the world of Saw.
So before we wrap this episode up, I have one outstanding question, and I'm curious. Are you more interested in the John Kramer style of, let's say, petty vengeance? Where, hey, I've had these personal slights and open my eyes to things are wrong, I will punish you for them. Or the Logan version of, I am a purveyor of the law and I speak for the dead.
I hate that shit. No, no. A John all the way. I want to see a petty man with cancer torment people who aren't cherishing their lives because that makes him happy.
I like the philosophical discussion one opens more so than what we got in this film, where poor Logan, we all kind of feel on his side. Maybe he went too far, but a guy who's a serial killer who makes adamant statements that he speaks for the dead and the audience goes, no, the dead would agree, doesn't suit me in the same way.
You're supposed to cheer whenever Logan declares that he speaks for the dead. Like, yeah, somebody's taking care of the little guy. And it's like, we're in the Saw franchise.
It's weird. I don't know what I think to a degree they were going with Logan's thing is people who essentially like create shrapnel with their lives and people get in the and people get caught in the crossfire. That their actions lead to others getting hurt.
Mike accidentally wrote something more interesting than most of the Saws.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, it's just a matter of the fact they couldn't really expand on that kind of stuff in the 30 seconds at the end of this movie. I have no idea. I don't know if it was just kind of wrongheaded.
this reminds me of an idea that was proposed by Toby Hooper with the original Texas Chainsaw, that people walked into a fucked up situation. Like, this was all happening without them, and they involved themselves by accident.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be weird if there was a Saw where the traps were going on and a guy, like, went to the warehouse to deliver fucking Uber Eats?
Yeah.
And he got dragged in? Like, that's almost the perspective I would want in a reboot of Saw, where it's the outsider who is innocent of these things being dragged into a deeply philosophical murder plot. And this guy has to be like, what am I doing here? Like, What are the bad things I did? I have normal transgressions. Like, I was mean to my sister and then she died, but it wasn't, she died because I was mean to her. I just regret that. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of ground to be explored, and they're still unfortunately trapped in a very narrow scope. Like, they got to hit a very limited number of keys. So the music you hear is always going to be reminiscent of what you've heard before.
Yeah.
Oh, well. But we're well past the credits, folks. So thank you for hanging with us as we grapple with Jigsaw as a legacy sequel, reboot, soft sequel thing.
I like how we just had like a 10-minute State of the Union on the Saw franchise.
We take Saw very seriously.
8 movies in, it's about time we reappraise our stances.
We got 2 more of these things.
Oh, boy. Well, technically 3 once the 3rd one comes out, if we drag these long enough.
Oh, yeah.
September,
oh,
no. Maybe. It'll go forever.
Oh,
and
no,
ever
they're
going to
go yearly again, too. Oh, no.
Honestly, I ain't even mad. I would love it if we had a horror franchise that came out every fucking year. I'd be so happy.
That's what was the great thing about the original series. Unfortunately, that's also the thing that killed the original series.
If it's Halloween, it must be Saw.
I know.
It mustn't always be Saw, Lionsgate. It must, Jamie!
That's where, like, continue, like, the Book of Saw thing, and then, like, a mainline Saw. That way you can change one each year. 1 year's a Book of Saw, 1 year's a Saw. That way you always get your Saw in.
I like how you're suggesting they do the original Disney Star Wars formula. Which they could, they would probably burn
it
out.
It works. It actually will goddamn work.
Isn't it
just
isn't it
work
weird?
At it.
It's going to be like 8 years between theatrical Star Wars series after Disney paid like $4 billion for Star Wars. Anyways, Warren Cools, if you're listening, we're out here and we're willing to throw together a shitty Saw movie that we're going to regret.
Yeah.
We take less. We're not even Hollywood. Oh no, that makes us scabs. Oh no. Anyways, folks, thank you so much for listening. We still have a couple more of these because, believe it or not, Saw kept going. We still have a Chris Rock Saw. Believe it or not, a thing that really happened. And then a Saw 10 that's a flashback, like it's a Saw 1.5. It's pretty good. It's weird. I can't explain it. Hopefully I'll think of more words by the time we do the commentary on that one, because it's going to be a long hour 40 if I don't. But we appreciate you as an audience. You can find more of Box Office Pulp. If you just type that into the internet, I don't think too many other people are using our name yet, but we are on Google. Just Google.
We are on Google.
I've never been good at these closers.
No, that's it. That's all you got to say. We are on Google.
Go type into Firefox Box Office Pulp.
Cody, you're just getting older and older by the moments.
I keep talking about us.
I keep talking about it as the cancer when I have relatives over.
If you excuse me, I'm going to go to the Best Buy and pick up some DVDs.
No, they don't have those anymore.
Flip phones. They still got those.
Well, you can find more Box Office Pulp, including 7 other goddamn Saw commentaries. We've been this adamant about doing them all on boxofficepulp.com. We are on Spotify. We're on Google Music, iTunes, you name it. We are actually out there. Somehow they allowed us on the internet.
Too.
Bing! Baby duck
and
soup.
And Lycos. Go get it.
You look us up, we're there, and we're ready for you.
Does Ask Jeeves still exist? We could be on there if that's still there.
I assumed yes, but now I'm scared that part of my childhood got ripped off like a Band-Aid.
It's just G. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's ask.com now.
I looked
it up 12
Bullshit.
Years ago.
Jamie's right. There's ask.com. What's your question?
Yeah,
they got rid of Jeeves in like 2008.
Gross. Bring back LimeWire. We're also on LimeWire.
Yeah, you can pirate us. We don't care. We don't make money. Actually, I think that's true. I don't think a single one of us have made a cent off of this podcast after like 11 years of doing it.
Nope, never. One day, I want it to pay for a pizza. That's all I want, podcast pizza.
If you
want
to send a pizza.
Cost us money, but not our Disney.
If you want to send a pizza to Mike Napier, Mike, give him your Venmo.
Just send it to my PayPal. Great. I have a Cash App.
Well, this episode's gone too long. Thank you so much. This is 2 hours of bullshit, and I can't express how happy I am that you've listened to all of this. Thank you. Have a good night. Get the hell out of here.
You get more out of life when you go out to a movie. Please remember to replace the speaker on the post when you leave the theater.
This here show is brought to you by Zencastr, the all-in-one solution for podcasting that's easy as logging in and hitting record. With Zencastr, you get studio-quality sound up to 4K video right from your browser. No more worrying about unstable connections thanks to Zencastr's multi-layered backups that ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality. But that's not all. Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound like a pro. It automatically removes those pesky ums and ahs and even those awkward pauses in conversation. If only it could remove those from my love life. But gone are the days of needing a bunch of different tools and services to create a podcast. Zencastr's complete platform lets you create, edit, and distribute your podcast all in one place, allowing you to easily publish to Spotify, Apple, and all other major destinations. So why wait? Start your podcasting journey with Zencastr today and experience the zen of podcasting. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code BOXOFFICEPULP. And you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.